She lifted her chin, sudden and fierce pride briefly driving out the grief in her eyes. He would stay for you. My vision got a little blurry, and I sat down in the nearest chair, probably just a reaction to all the strain of the past couple of days. Yeah, I said, my throat thick. He would. I called everyone on the list Molly had quoted me and told them they could wait to see me until we knew about Michael. Except for Murph, they all got upset about that. I told them they could go to hell and hung up on them. Then I settled in with Molly and Charity and waited. Hospital waits are bad ones. The fact that they happen to pretty much all of us sooner or later doesn't make them any less hideous. They're always just a little bit too cold. It always smells just a little bit too sharp and clean. It's always quiet, so quiet that you can hear the fluorescent lights. Another constant, these lights, humming. Pretty much everyone else there is in the same bad predicament you are, and there isn't much in the way of cheerful conversation. And there's always a clock in sight. The clock has superpowers. It always seems to move too slowly. Look up at it, and it will tell you the time. Look up an hour and a half later, and it will tell you 2 minutes have gone by. Yet it somehow, simultaneously, has the ability to remind you of how short life is, to make you acutely aware of how little time someone you love might have remaining to them. A day crawled by. A doctor came to see Charity twice to tell her that things were still bad and that they were still working. The second visit came around supper time, and the doc suggested that she get some food if she could, that they should know something more definite after the next procedure, in 3 or 4 hours. He asked if Charity knew whether or not Michael had agreed to be an organ donor. Just in case, he said. They hadn't been able to find his driver's license. I could tell that Charity wanted to tell the doctor where he could shove his question and just how far it could go, but she told him what Michael would have told him. Yes, of course he had. The doctor thanked her and left. I walked down to the cafeteria with Charity and Molly, but I didn't feel like eating or having food urged upon me. I figured that Charity probably had a critical back pressure of mothering built up after this much time away from her kids. On the way, I claimed that I needed to stretch my legs, which was the truth. Sometimes when there's too much going on in my head, it helps to walk around a bit. So I walked down hallways, going nowhere in particular, just being careful not to pass too near any equipment that might be busy keeping someone alive at the moment. I wound up sitting down in the hospital chapel. It was the usual for such a place, quiet, subdued colors and lights, bench seating with an aisle in the middle and a podium up at the front, the standard layout for the services of any number of faiths. Maybe it leaned a little harder toward Catholicism than most, but that might have been only natural. The Jesuits actually had a chaplaincy in residence and held mass there regularly. It was quiet, which was the important thing. I sank onto a pew, aching, and closed my eyes. Lots of details chased their way around my head. Michael had come in with gunshot wounds. The cops were going to ask lots of questions about that. Depending on the circumstances of the helicopter's return to Chicago, that could get really complicated really fast. On the other hand, given the depth of Marcone's involvement, the problems might just vanish. He had his fingers in so many pies in Chicago's city government that he could probably have any inquiry quashed if he really wanted it done. Given what he'd been saved from, it would be consistent with his character for Marcone to repay the people who bailed him out with whatever aid he could render in turn. It irked me that Marcone could ever be in a position to offer significant aid to Michael, regardless of the circumstances. Of course, for that to happen, Michael would first need to survive.